our new person, and hope you get something out of it. Meeting's a little different. It's seminar style, I call it. And before we begin, I'm going to say the set aside prayer. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about you, the steps, recovery, the big book, the program, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially let me let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. Help me carry the message tonight. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, just a few things. Wednesday we finished Freedom from Anger. It'll be on the site this next week. Step four, that's where we are in the big book, page 66, 67. We looked at the instructions and directions to be free of anger. And so this next Wednesday, we're going to look at the fourth column, what was our mistakes, our character defects, how we harm people, look at the resentment and the instructions. So that's where you are on Wednesdays. On Saturdays, we began step 11, we're on page 86, and we looked at the nightly review. And this next Saturday, we're going to look at the instructions during the day. Powerful stuff. And we're in July, right? So in 2 months, we will have started our 12th year. So that's really something. And so I was embarrassed to look and see how long it's taken us to get to the 11th step on Saturdays. It's taken us like 14 months. But because we cover the steps we took, carry the message, all the stuff. So tonight, we are, I think it's the 10th or 11th time we're going through the big book, and we're on There is a Solution. So we started the book over on Sunday nights, and the three meetings started similar. The Saturday was first, the Wednesday I started in January, and then the Sunday I started in, I think, March or April. And each was designed to do something different, but as it turned out, I ended up just going through the big book with the steps we took and the steps. So I hope it's helped somebody. Tonight we're looking at the page 17, which Joe and Charlie said is the most important page in the book for newcomers and I believe for old timers. There's a powerful message in here, and so we're going to cover There's a Solution. I'm going to try to cover only three pages and see how we do with that, because there's so much information on here. Now remember, this was written in 1938, published in 39, and before this there was no solution for our disease. There was no hope for us. There was no treatment plan that worked. And this title, it's very clever. It's called There's a Solution. Did you know that? Joe and Charlie make the point that alcoholics never read anything carefully, because it says if you've carefully, but we have a solution in AA. We only have one solution in AA. Now, there may be other solutions, but there is a solution in AA. And the solution we read about tonight was the 12 steps. And this is their solution. And they don't tell you that you need to do it. But what AA tells you is if what you're doing hasn't worked, try this. Now, why do people work the steps at all? Because everything else has failed. And then we choose to do the steps and follow these directions because we had no other plan that worked. And so we're going to see what they say here. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Now, I have the original manuscript at home. I forgot to look it up. We had the two princesses this weekend, so I was busy. But I wanted to see if they put thousands in the original manuscript, because there were only 80 people sober when they wrote the book. And so I don't know what they put. But now we know of how many? Millions. Several million, hopefully, who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Now, we just finished Bill's story, and for those who were here and studied it, he was completely hopeless. On page 8 of his story, quicksand surrounded him. He was a bitter morass of self-pity. Alcohol was his master. This was 1934, and he was dying of alcoholism, and he had no hope. And then remember, fear sobered him a little bit, remember? Then he got drunk. Then self-knowledge, he thought, would fix it, and he got drunk. And then he was in the hospital when the doctor was talking to his wife about having to put him in an asylum or die of the DTs or heart failure. This is where he was. And then God decided that alcoholics didn't have to die anymore. And I also believe that God, he didn't tell me this, so it's only my thought, is that God felt that only the people who were desperate as we were would do these spiritual principles. And I believe he wanted to give us these principles to the world so that people could use this to get close to him and have a relationship with him. And so then he sent Abby Thatcher to his house, right, in Brooklyn on November 11th or something. And Bill was dying in the kitchen, and Ebby came, and Ebby had been one of his old drinking buddies, and he was sober 60 days. And then Ebby said, I've got a religion, I've got a program of action. Bill didn't like that. He figured he had enough booze to outlast Ebby, right? And then Ebby talked to him, and Bill didn't want to hear about God. Anybody ever been to a meeting where you say somebody doesn't want to hear about God? I've had people walk out of this meeting and tell me I talked about God too much, and that's okay. But Bill didn't want to hear about it. And then Ebby said, well, why don't you choose your own conception of God? And Bill said, I couldn't argue with that. I mean, how can you argue with it? It's your conception. And so as soon as he did that, things changed. It says that icy intellectual mountain that he had built, that he had lived in under, he had built this icy intellectual mountain between him and God. He built it. And as soon as he was willing to believe that there was a God that could help him, it melted. And then he went into the hospital, and we read how he worked the steps with Ebby. And then he said, this is simple but not easy. A price had to be paid, remember? You get a bill, and the bill you have to pay is to destroy your self-centeredness. And then how did he say we do it? We turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. And then this is the man who was dying. He's in the hospital, and he felt the presence of God. So he called the doctor and said, there's something wrong. Am I going crazy? And now, there are people who don't like AA. I don't know if you know that, but there are people who think we're a cult, and we're kind of these crazy people get together and chant and hold hands and sing Kumbaya or something. But they say that Bill had the DTs, and that Bill's spiritual experience was DTs, which is so preposterous, you know. But people, I've read that on the internet. So he had this spiritual experience. He went to the doctor, and the doctor came and saw him. He came in, and he said, I see something different in you. Whatever you have, hang on to it, right? And then he's in the hospital. The man was in the kitchen arguing about God, right, dying. And here, a couple weeks later, he's sitting in bed thinking of how he can help people who are dying of alcoholism. Now, if that isn't a spiritual transformation, I don't know what is. And it was, he had such a powerful spiritual experience that nobody could stop him from working with alcoholics, right? And then he met Dr. Bob, and then the alcoholic number 3, and they had the Akron group, the New York group, 80 to maybe 80 people sober. They decided to write this book, and we're here today. Isn't that amazing? So Bill was hopeless. Everybody agree? But he died in 1971. The book was written in 1938. He wasn't a perfect man. We don't worship Bill W. He was somebody God chose. God chose people throughout history to do his will. And he chose Bill. And Bill, we owe a lot to him and Dr. Bob and all those who came before us. I think that we have to remember how much they did for us. And if you're sober today, are you working with someone? Are you taking them through the steps? Are you carrying the message to somebody? And if you're not, ask yourself why. This is a gift that we need to give away. because I was thinking about it today, it's hard for me to find people to help me sponsor people. And why is that? And I get texts from people I've worked with, and they text me, they're doing great, and thanks for helping them. I say, well, why don't you come back and work with somebody? And the next text takes a day or so. But it's not that they're bad people, but why don't we do it? Why don't we doing that? So I was thinking about that today. Sorry to get off the subject. Mary's probably never going to come back now. But that's okay. And it says, nearly all have recovered. Now I heard recovered alcoholic 13 or 14 years ago, and I thought that guy was really arrogant. You know, he's recovered. And I didn't understand what he was saying. I don't know if he understood what he was saying, but it's in the book. So I said I was a recovered alcoholic tonight. But how can you be recovered, and yet it says on page 85, we're not cured, right? So what's the difference? Well, recovered is a state of mind where you don't have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. Dr. Young told Roland he had the mind of a chronic alcoholic, never seen anybody recover. Now, the mind of a chronic alcoholic is obsessed with drinking, right? And the obsession to drink is in their mind. And if you don't have that obsession to drink today, and you have a power in your life so it's not dominating you, then you're recovered. Now, on page 85, and I did the meeting, 2 weeks ago, where I talked about the recovered promises. Did anybody know that they're recovered promises? They're in the big book on page 85 in the 10th step. It says, when we're in fit spiritual condition, we react to alcohol as from a hot flame. We recoil. We see the truth about it. And it says it just happens to us. It's the miracle. And that's when we have a relationship with God. We're in step 10. We're in the world of the Spirit. And God's in our lives. And if we're in fit spiritual condition, we'll react normally to alcohol. And so today I feel like I'm in fit spiritual condition regarding alcohol. That's what recovered means. Now, it's suggested, and we read it yesterday or 2 weeks ago, that it suggested that alcohol is a subtle foe, an immortal enemy, that we stay in fit spiritual condition or we're going to die, right? So we have a daily reprieve based upon staying in fit spiritual condition. So recovered is not a condition that stays forever. It's a condition that you have to keep working to stay recovered. It's like a diabetic taking their medicine, keeping their insulin under control. So nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. Now, I want to tell you, Bill W. was a salesman. Do you think this paragraph is a sales job? They've all hopeless. They're all recovered. They've all solved the drink problem. Well, why? Because he believed in it, and he wanted to sell this. Now, it says they have solved the drink problem. I don't think we're going to cover three pages tonight, by the way. They have solved the drink problem. Is that a true statement? Mm-hmm. Well, but they didn't solve it, you see. See, God solved it. Who solves it? The problem was solved. Now, on page 45, it says, lack of power, that's our dilemma. Remember, we have to have a power to live. And it has to be a power greater than ourselves. And they say we find the power, and the power solves our problem, remember? And so God solves the problem. We have the relationship with God. But I forgive Bill. He's a salesman, and what he says here is really true in a way. And what he's saying in this first paragraph is, you're reading this book, you're dying of alcoholism. Now remember, there was no AA when the book was written. This was written for people to read and then to do what was in it so they could survive, and then they would pass the message. And he's trying to get people's attention and give them hope for people who are dying. And Bill's story is a story of hope, right? And a story of transformation. Now, this next two paragraphs are really important. We are average Americans. Anybody average? Are there any average alcoholics in this room? No, of course not. But we're all above average, right? All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We were people would never have met if it wasn't for AA. Probably would never have met. Not anybody's better or worse. It's just we would never have met. We have all different political backgrounds, economic, social, and religious backgrounds in the room tonight, right? We are people who normally would not mix, but there exists among us a fellowship. And Stu, look up fellowship in there. You know, it's a group of people who have a common goal and bond. So I think we have a fellowship here tonight, a friendliness. We were all friendly to each other, and understanding, which is indescribably wonderful. And that's what we hope to give new people when they come, that they're part of something that that is powerful and will help them. Association between individuals, especially on pleasant, equal, or intimate terms. Sharing common interests, experience, or purpose. And so that's the fellowship that we're in tonight. And it says, we are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck. Now, I don't know about you, but my ship liner hit an iceberg. And I was shipwrecked. I was in the water. Anybody else in the water?
Yeah.
And if you weren't in the water, you may not be done. You know, when you're in the water and you hit that bottom, you never want to forget it, right? Because you don't want to go in the water twice. And so I remember that moment. And so they were shipwrecked. They all hit the iceberg. This is like the Titanic. Everybody see the movie Titanic? All right. So they were shipwrecked, remember? And when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Now what they mean here is that their steerage was these ocean liners in the old days. I went on the Queen something 35 years ago, and they had it so that if you were in the upper class, you only had certain stairwells, and you couldn't get, and like some of the rich Americans or rich people who went on the upper class, their mistresses would stay in the lower class so that they could get to it, but they, you know, you get the picture. Steerage was where they had the animals, you know, and the people had their, you know, all their belongings and their pets and on the basement. And the captain's table was the exclusive, the richy-richy. It used to be a big deal if you got invited to captain's table. I hope we are over all that. Unlike the feelings of the ship passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. So we all hit the iceberg together, right? And then we come here and we're really happy, right? And everybody feels better the first few days of recovery, right? They feel better. They have hope. They're not drinking. They're not making a mess of their lives right now. And we have joy. We've escaped disaster, right? And this feeling of having shared in a common peril. Now, we all said we're alcoholics tonight, right? So we all had the common peril. We all hit the iceberg together, right? But it's only one element in the powerful cement which binds us. Now, this is a powerful line. We need a cement, and we need cement, and the fellowship, and the common peril, and the joy of escaping disaster is only one element. It's not enough. Get the picture? Being in the fellowship, being friendly, being of service, being shipwrecked together is not enough. But that in itself would never have held us together as we're now joined. So Joe and Charlie make the point there are two powers. There's the power of the fellowship, and then there's the power of the program. And so the next line is the tremendous fact. This is the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. Anybody agree with that in the room? Yeah. We have a way out. They were going to call the book The Way Out, but there were so many way outs that they didn't use that name. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. They don't mince any words here, do they? They have a common solution and a way out, and they all agree on it, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. What a powerful paragraph. Now let me go through it a little bit. The tremendous fact is that we've discovered a common solution, right? We just read it tonight, the 12 steps. And that we have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. But here's the deal. We have to join in action. without action, nothing changes. Nothing happens. And it should be harmonious, and it should be brotherly. And so you start with fellowship, common peril, right? And then you come here, and we have a common solution. We tell people about the solution. We give them books, right? And we tell them this is a way out. But unless they have the action, nothing's going to change. So the cement that binds us is not just the common program and the way out, but it's the action. So if everybody came to AA and we all believed in the 12 steps, right? And we all thought it's a way out, but none of us did it. Then we wouldn't have great news for those who suffer from alcohol. We would have nothing to give away. Do you see the picture? We need two elements in the cement, and I'm afraid that AA in 2019 has changed from 1939. We have a fellowship of AA, and then we have a program in AA, and they're not the same anymore. And a lot of people think that the fellowship is going to 90 meetings in 90 days, you know, and just don't take the first drink, and think through the first drink, and you know, we have all these sayings, and they're not good or bad. But the program of recovery is the 12 steps. And you, unless you do the program of recovery, nothing's going to change. And you won't have a power in your life to recover from alcoholism. And then if nobody worked the steps, we wouldn't have a fellowship. And so I think it all ties together. I don't know if I made that clear or not. It says this is the great news. Now the Bible's the good news, right? And so this is the great news book. And it is great news. And this book, in a way, is a book of salvation, too, for us, right? And it's a way out. And it's a solution. It's great news for those who suffer from alcoholism. So I know about you, but people need to understand this page. So I think you did a good job at writing that. I think it's very well clear. And so they didn't call it Way Out. They called it Alcoholics Anonymous. You know how they got the name? I've heard the story. I don't know if none of us really know if it's true. But they had a guy come to one of the meetings in New York. And he was a pretty wet brain. He'd been a famous, wealthy individual. And they were talking about what to call it. And he says, call it Anonymous Alcoholics. And they liked that because of the point that we're, none of us are better than anybody else. We're all together equal. And so they took the name Alcoholics Anonymous for it. Now, the book was Alcoholics Anonymous. You know that, don't you? People think it's called the Big Book, but it's really Alcoholics Anonymous. And they took the name, the Cleveland group took the name Alcoholics Anonymous for their group from the book. And then Akron and New York, and we're here today. It says, an illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it an illness, involves those about us in a way no other human sickness can. And we have a spiritual illness, right? We have a spiritual malady. We have a separation from God. And then that separation from God leads to the obsession to drink. And then the obsession to drink, in alcoholics, we can't control how much we drink. Anybody have that problem here? And so if you can't control how much you drink, and your mind tells you you need a drink, you're in big trouble. But the roots of our trouble is in our self-centeredness and our separation from God. And how does that relate to alcohol? What's he talking about? Well, if you separate from God and you're self-centered, and you live a self-centered life, you're going to be in conflict with everybody and everyone. You're going to get irritable, restless, and discontented. And your mind's going to seek the ease and comfort of alcohol. Anybody ever do that in this room? And so it's a different illness than any other illness that we have seen. If a person has cancer, all are sorry for him, and no one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness. For with it, you might not want to read this because it's pretty ugly, but this is what we do. Annihilation of all the things worthwhile in life. Anybody do that? Think about it. Engulfs all whose lives touch the self-sufferer. See, we don't always see it, how we touch so many people's lives. not just when we were drinking, but in our self-centered life, when you look back and do your four-step, all the people you harmed, all the people you hurt, it brings misunderstanding. Was anybody here misunderstood? Fierce resentment. We can't understand why these people are so angry with us, right? It's bewildering. You know, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers, warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents. Anyone can increase the list. It's sad, but it's true, right? And we don't see it, right? Remember, we're like the person who comes up from the tornado saying, wow, isn't it grand that the wind's still blowing? That's page 76 or something. We're like a tornado, and we roar through the lives of people. We hope this volume will inform and comfort those who are or may be affected. So this is a book of hope for the people who are living with us, everybody who's involved in our lives. Highly competent psychiatrists who have dealt with us have found it sometimes impossible to persuade an alcoholic to discuss the situation without reserve. Anybody go to therapy and not tell your therapist everything?
No.
I used to take care of people. They were, they'd come up. I'd have to wheel them up into the hospital when I was an intern, 3 a.m. I said, have you been drinking? No, just a little bit, doc. Just a little bit. The pancreas is completely inflamed. There's cirrhosis. They're in coma. Anyway. Strangely enough, wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find us more unapproachable to do the psychiatrist and doctor. I don't think we want people to tell us what to do, do we? Mm-hmm. I think that's a common, am I the only person like that? We fight any kind of suggestions of anything that we change, right? Because we want to be in charge. And so I think a lot of times the people are unapproachable. I think things have changed today when this was written because AA is so well respected, and when there's a place people can go and they can send them. But before they wrote this book, they didn't have these meetings in this organization. But here's Squiggly writing, but the ex-problem drinker who has, and that means it's important, who has found this solution, who is properly aligned with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. Now, I think this is what the book tries to do in the first 43 pages, is try to help the alcoholic understand what their experience is from what we tell them our experience is and the people wrote the book. And a lot of times, we want to tell people they're an alcoholic or what they should do. Has anybody ever done that? When a new person comes, poor guy comes to the meeting, gets all this advice, everybody gangs up on him. And that's okay, that's good. But really what we're supposed to share is our experience to see if they had the same experience. So what I try to do with the new person is ask them why they're here. Ask them if they know what their problem is. And then ask them a few questions and I tell them my experience and ask them if they had that experience and talk about the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind and the unmanageability of my life. And then they'll have to see if it's their experience. Now, it doesn't say in the book that you can't tell somebody they're an alcoholic. You hear that. It says in working with others, you can tell them they're an alcoholic if you have to. But that really won't help somebody until they realize that they're an alcoholic. And remember, the first step of recovery is what? Anybody remember? We have to concede to our innermost self that we're alcoholic. The idea that someday or somehow we will be like other people has to be smashed.
From the peanut gallery.
Pay him extra or anything?
Jimmy, welcome, buddy.
Special effects.
See, the first step in the program, calm down, Greg. The first step in the program is, what does the first step on the wall say? We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, right? Everybody, but that's not the first step in recovery, because in the steps on the wall, you don't say you're an alcoholic. You admit you're powerless over alcohol. The first step in recovery is to understand that you're an alcoholic and what that means. And that's why the first chapter in the big book's the doctor's opinion, because it tells you what it means to be an alcoholic. He talks about the allergy of the body, phenomenon of craving, the obsession of the mind, seeking the ease and comfort of the next drink. And so a lot of people come here and they don't really understand what's wrong with them. And it's not because they're bad people, they just don't know. And so once you explain your situation and you read the book with them, then they can see if they have this situation. And if they do, then you can explain that there's hope for them. And it says that the man, and it says nothing, little or nothing can be accomplished. So unless the person can see the truth about themselves, they can't begin to work the steps. And the only truth they have to know in the beginning is what makes them an alcoholic, and then that they're powerless over alcohol, and that they made their lives unmanageable. And there's another thing in here, is properly armed with the facts about himself. The truth about myself. Now, I don't need to be properly armed with the facts about the new person. I need to be armed with the truth about myself so I can tell them what's my situation to see if it's their situation. And that's why Bill got in trouble, because he preached in the beginning, nobody got sober. But then he and Dr. Bob, when they went to new people, they talked about, and that's where Dr. Bob was dying, remember? And he knew he was an alcoholic, and he knew he couldn't stop drinking, right? And he thought he was just a weak, sick, sinful man. And he was in the Oxford group, and he told the Oxford group to pray for him because he just couldn't stop drinking. And that was the Christian Fellowship, remember, that we took our steps from. But when Bill went to see him, he told Dr. Bob of his experience, his obsession of the mind, his inability to control how much he drinks, and he could relate, and that he was powerless. And then Dr. Bob could see that he had no power. He couldn't have done any differently. And then that freed him to be able to work the steps. And so I think we're going to stop there. Only two pages, sorry. It'll take us 18 months to get through this book this time. So we'll pick up on 18. And then we go through and they tell you why they wrote the book. And then they're going to talk here in the next few pages about the allergy of the body and then the obsession of the mind. And then the way this chapter is laid out on page 24, they tell us we have no defense against the next drink. Page 25 is the solution. And then 26 and 27 is how Roland Hazard got the solution from Dr. Young. And then they end it with the spiritual experience. Very powerful, this chapter. Very well laid out. Well, thank you. And I hope you got something out of it. And